အာယုံနဲ့တိလာပြီပေါ့တိတဲ့ဟာတွေကိုတဲ့မှတ်သားထားမလားမဟုတ်ရင်ဒီတိုင်းလွတ်လွတ်ပြော့ဆက်ပြော့ပြစ်စုံပါမယ်သိရမလားတဲ့စိတ်ကသင်္ကန်းစာယူဖို့ဖြစ်ခဲ့တာတွေကိုမှတ်မိခြင်းဘယ်လိုလုပ်ရမလဲ The question is, do we need to recall objects, things, experiences, or let go of them? Just be aware of the present moment and be aware of the present moment. But if the mind wants to recall and learn from experiences, good experiences, what can we do? Not just good, but bad also. Yeah, he says it's just enough to know the objects. The mind will all recognize and also remember on its own. If the mind is awake, you know, is alert, then the mind will recognize what's happening. You don't have to purposely try to recall things. Yeah, and as your awareness becomes more, you know, continuous and all, and the awareness becomes stronger, you know, the memory function of the mind this also becomes stronger anyway. From good experience if the mind wants to recall and learn from good experience what can we do
bad experience
also you can learn
okay would there be a reason or an explanation why someone would have a dream the same dream
Again,
for years on end.
ပါကြလူတယောက်ကအိမ်မက်တစ်မျိုးကိုနင့်နေချင်းစက္ကနာဖြစ်တ
ယ်။ Try လို့သိကတာသူစိတ်ဝင်စားရင်ဒါလည်းတော့ခဏခဏစဉ်းစားလို့မရဘူး
။ The mind is interested in it, maybe intrigued by it, attached to it.
Try လို့
When you're
attached to it, ဒီပေါ်မှာသူစိတ်ကစိတ်ဝင်စားရမှု Try လာနေတယ
်။
Attachment
happens because of various things, not because you just like something, but also if you are afraid of something or you dislike something, there's attachment because of that emotion. So for whatever reason, the mind is attached to something, then it can recur over and over again.
I just really like to clarify how I'm supposed to be practicing. My approach to practice is the choiceless awareness. And yesterday in a conversation, it came up that if it's choiceless awareness, then a predominant object comes to the front. And you focus on that object. Well,
even with choiceless awareness.
And that's what I'm trying to... for me, I think objects arise and objects pass. And sometimes, when I first sit, I sit with an awareness of the body sitting. And then visually I go to breath with maybe secondary awareness of hearing or feelings in the body. And I try and sit with that, with just then from sort of behind watching those things. And I'm wondering whether I'm supposed to have objects or not supposed to have objects. I can't imagine not having objects. And that the conversation yesterday confused me.
ตัวตัวอัธรคุณก็โลดออกมาเลยโลซึ้งซ่าเลยนะเนี่ยเตียเอาเนี่ยสกาเปาะดูตัวเนเน่ชั่วว่ะเนี่ยตัวอ่ะตัวอัธรตาก็ choiceless awareness ป่ะตัวพิจารณาอายุพิตัวติมั้ยแต่ว่าโหหลัวเปาะเนี่ยอ่ะ choiceless awareness โลยเนาะมาอายุตะคู่กูอ่ะเทช่าละเนี่ยเทช่าละตัวสิ่งตัวอเมียมาก็อายุเนี่ยเทช่าไปมั้ยผิดแต่ပြောက်တယ်တခါတလေအာယုံနှစ်ခုကိုတခုကနည်းနည်းပိုတင်ချာတခုကပုံမဲ့ဒါပေမဲ့နှစ်ခုစလုံးကိုအသိနေတယ်အဲ့
တော
့အာယုံကရှိရမှာမရှိရဘူးလားဒါပေမဲ့သူစိတ်ထဲမှာအာယုံကမရှိလို့မှမရပဲလေ
အာယုံပြောက်ထုံးလာမှမရှိဘူ
း Yeah he's
There
is always object. It's impossible for there not to be an object. So long as there is mind, there is an object that the mind is paired with.
This conversation was with me. The question was, the problem was, the Masi system, we make a primary object, like the breath or the abdomen or something, and everything becomes secondary.
Yes.
The moment you talk about primary object, you've already made a choice.
Right.
One is primary, other is secondary, there's a choice there.
Correct.
So it's not choiceless awareness. Choiceless awareness is everything is equal.
Choiceless awareness is a secondary something.
Choiceless awareness is only equal in the sense that all objects are allowed to become significant. But in any moment, some object or the other, or some objects or the other, will become more significant than others before they become less. So, it's just that choiceless just means that you personally don't make a choice. But naturally, something does become chosen. Something does become known more clearly than something else. But you wouldn't call it a primary, or that it wasn't equal, or something like that. It just is. You know it, and then you know something else, and then maybe it's the same thing
for that moment.
Personal choosing and the power is different.
So, for example, if we chose to start by putting our attention to the breath, that's our choice. And then you might notice some sensation on your arm, and that's choiceless. But now that has become significant.
So it doesn't need to be sustainable over time. It could be changing really, really fast.
Yeah.
And maybe more settled, then it's possibly not changing as fast.
That's right. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether it's changing fast or slow, doesn't change for a long time. You just know that. Yeah, this is how
it's changing.
And if you know it's changing, especially when it's changing, if you recognize that it's changing. Even if we just move, there's change. Right? Physically, if you move, there's change already. Yeah. Yes?
Sino has made us aware that there's an array of objects,
yes,
and there's a knower.
Yes.
So you can either be aware of the knower, or be aware of the objects that it's knowing. So I find that there's kind of a battle going on between the two.
Which to know.
Which, and so if I'm aware of the battle, which one do I go to? The knower or the objects?
Okay.
I know Tiyamna, Tiyamna, Tiyamna. Tiyamna,
Tiyamna, what?
Take the knower if you can know it. Because the knower comes with the known, right, with the objects, and if you know the knower, you already know the object. Yeah. If you choose the object, you may not know the knower. But if you know the knower, you cannot help but know the object.
Okay. Yeah. On this question of choice.
Choice.
In my meditation, in my sitting meditation, my mind inclines to adopt either or both modes which I have acquired. Ways or methods.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very briefly going to outline these two methods.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like or comment or make observations on these two modes. The first is that I keep in my mind that I have to develop sati.
Mm-hmm.
And I invoke the instructions on anapanasati.
Okay.
Anapana. with the intention of developing sati and samadhi. And I go into details of the instructions on anapanasati,
yes,
in, out, short, long, and all that, you see. And I feel that there is a great deal of necessity for personal effort to be put into focusing attention on these various aspects of the
breath.
Of the breath. And I also think that it is relevant on this approach to recall the injunctions on the attainment of jhana. At the end of each jhana instructions, there is this pali, chandam janeti vayamati viryam arupati chidam paganati pathati. And the translation which I have chosen of this is stirring up energy, exerting the mind. So here in my first approach is an actual positive conscious effort to be made in developing what I
want
with sati and all. The second approach is this, that I start off with a little bit of anapanasati, and when I feel within a relatively short time that it is established, I make that as an anchor, and I sort of stick to that anchor, and now I start surveying the all, everything else that comes into
the purview
of my thing, which is, you know, sound of silence,
yes,
the belly,
whatever,
rising and falling. So both these approaches, both scenarios involve effort. And yet we hear from time to time that the real thing is effortless. So I would like Sayadaw to make some observations on these two aspects of their continuance or discontinuance, or for that matter any modifications that would
enhance. No swab, bro. Teti chaja loa me sura pare. Eri hao, ero tua darile athere. Now to munia tua anapana u, yuli, neneli lo pro, sekany labi soi, tihao ro anchor tabro, chanabati nile lo, alo like chidere. Tihale athere. Tametu ta chacha nida, tia atota manka ne effortless piame. Ero.
ဦးဇေယဒီသူပထမနှစ်ဒီသူသုံးနှစ်ကြာနှစ်နှစ်ရောနည်းနည်းပြောပါနောက်ပြီးတော့
ใช่นี่โหลเลยอ่ะเออตัวอัปปะสัตอัปปะกัดตัวอัปปะปะนะไอ้พอดีโหลขึ้นตัวเลยอืมแต่ไม่เอฟเฟคกะยัดอ่ะมะหุบมะหุบว่าโอ้อัปปะนั้นโหลเออตัวตัวเชิงโหลตัวเชิงเลยอ่ะแล้วก็ไม่สิดามเนี่ย Okay, Sarah says, in the beginning, it's fine to do the practices you are doing. Personal effort is always necessary in the beginning because none of us, when we don't have a practice that has momentum and has its own steam, then we have to put in our personal effort to start the engine going, right? And he says, the thing is that when your personal effort, when you put in personal effort, it's not only in the sitting, it's very important to carry your awareness out into every moment. So the awareness is continuous. When awareness is continuous over and over, day after day after day, it gains momentum. When it gains momentum, it gains its own, you know, it's like a wheel going down a mountain. It can't stop. And that's when it feels like it's effortless. That's when your personal effort doesn't have to be so much inside, but it's not that the faculty of virya in the mind stops. Virya continues, but it's not, you don't have to exert it so much because you've already exerted enough for there to be momentum for it to keep carrying on by itself. And that's what is meant by effortless. It's not that right effort stops. Right effort gains momentum and therefore it continues to run on its own momentum. And that's when it feels
effortless.
But nothing can happen without right effort.
It is
one of the five faculties, one of the indriyas. It must be there. It cannot not be present. The five faculties, all of them, once they gain momentum, they all work together and they continue to work together. They're always present. If you ever go on a retreat where you have, you know, tried to be continuously mindful for 1-2 weeks, you'll notice after 1-2 weeks that it's not so much effort to try to maintain your mindfulness. It seems to come more and more naturally, and that's the feeling of effortlessness. But it's not that it's not that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yesterday we went on the forest walk, and it was really good, and I was very easy to be mindful.
Yeah.
But when we came back, I found a sort of an agitation, a grip wall for ages, all evening and even part of this morning. And I often found at home when I do meditate in the evenings, I do get a lot of agitation.
After?
In meditation. And it stops me. It's like a grip wall. So the trouble is, I know you're going to say, watch the agitation. But that's really hard when you're agitated. So what, is there anything
there? Instruction ga di agitation go ba chi da ba me agitate phit le a chei ma agitation go shu ara ne khet da mo re
eh eh tu go lu a ye ji na idea ba so wrong view le so ye to ko khet la
and right view ba
naturally agitation interesting
Sarah said, the attitude is key. Yes, it's difficult to be aware in the way we want to be aware when it's agitated. But he said, you must remember agitation is also a natural state of mind. Yeah? What's getting in your way is that you don't like it, you don't want to be agitated. The second thing is to actually have interest in the state of agitation. What is agitation like? Instead of watching it to make it go away, it's to allow it to be here. So long as it's there, you can investigate the nature of agitation. When it's not there, you can't investigate the nature of agitation.
နောက်တစ်ခုကသူက formal လုပ်ပြီဆိုရင်သူစိတ်ကတစ်ခုလုံးရမယ်ဆိုပြီးလုပ်သူစိတ်ကလွတ်လွတ်လပ်လပ်ကြိုက
် possibly also he says
personality လွတ်လွတ်လပ်ကြိုက်အဲ့လိုကြိုက်ရင်အပြင်မှာပါအဲ့လိုညံတော့
possibly he says you have a personality which likes freedom so when it's so when you're in a an informal environment say when you are free to do as you wish awareness comes easily to you but when you're put in a form when this is the form that meditation should take I'm trying to sit at home or when I come back from serpentine dam and then I have to go back to the meditation hall suddenly it's gone into the bonsai
must be
so the feeling that I have to meditate comes back rather than this what you were doing in serpentine dam which is just being aware so what's that
must be had to
it's a wrong thought
and stop in the head right
the default you know the blue book there's a cartoon you know with these thoughts you know I should do this must do this have this and all this and then there's a one chance to
that's not in there
so the tension of thinking it has to be some way
yes that's helpful I mean if I turned around and looked at that lack of freedom
အဲ့တော့သူစိတ်ထဲမှာကျဉ်ချက်တဲ့လိုဟ
ာကျဉ်ချက်တဲ့ဒါကြောင့်လိုရရှင်ပါ
Yeah so that's why the mind is becoming agitated
အဲ့တော့သူတရားထိုင်တဲ့ပုံစံကိုပြောင်းလိုက်လို့ရ
So maybe you can change your posture when you meditate when you meditate
Yeah okay for me yeah the
this formal thing you know when we put our hands together cross our legs and sit up straight it feels like a lot sometimes
Oh yo you know so I didn't even know that thing you know how to do it
He said there's a yogi who comes to relax in that posture and then shakes his head a little too just to relax into it
But they can't be another time
He says no and the yogi is like fully padded up
you know?
And after that maybe get sleepy
But serious was in that, I think, a thing.
Yeah. He says the moment the mind takes it seriously, it starts getting tense. Mm-hmm. Agitation comes to that.
I recognize that now.
I go to me and then, pure image.
တို့တရားထိုင်တော့ဟိုအစ်ဖာရှင်နဲ့အများကြီးပဲတော့မလုံးရအောင်ဆွေးရအောင်သူတို့နည
်း This is when we while begin our meditation training we have so many instructions you know don't move if possible when you're sitting you know don't do this don't do all these things and you don't think so yeah we get a lot of this
so ဒီငါလို့တော့တော့တော့တော့ကြာတယ်ခေါက်လာတယ်ပြေပြင်ခိုင်းတယ်ပြီးထိုင်တော့ပြောင်းခိုင်
း yeah there's a he was talking about this last night there's a yogi who for years the moment he takes his sitting posture he gets a block in his head literally his head is like a block he's got a headache And the moment he's gone for brain scans and stuff because he thought there was something wrong with him. But it's more like a meditation hallucination that posture sort of brings up this memory. And so the teacher's been trying for a few years to work with him. And he's tried everything. You know, he's got to relax, not think of his meditation, etc. And this time when he came, just before teacher came here, he told the yogi you have to stop he looked at him in the meditation hall and he sits and he already looks tense he's just begun so he told him don't sit like that he said sit like you're sitting in a in the market selling your goods so and then so he's changing the association of the mind with the because the mind has a pattern and it's associated that posture with this
Close the eyes, meditate, say like this, and all idea is come, boom.
So he not only told him to sit, you know, sit in a different posture to start with, he also told him to change his posture every 5 or 10 minutes. So he's sitting meditation, but he's constantly changing his posture, maybe stretching out his legs, maybe holding his knees, but just not doing that formal posture, and just... because it's just about awareness
he's not
he wants the awareness to be present which the yogi has and has been trying.
Yogi, look at mine. But I don't think I'm near Papio. But do you do that? But you do that?
Yeah.
But I don't do that.
So, as in the guided meditation yesterday, Sierra was reminding us not to try and to not try to not think. Right? Like, don't try to stop yourself from thinking. Not trying to not move. Yeah, we're just trying to be aware. Everything else is free form. Yeah, not even trying not to talk. He says instead of making the effort with what we have to do inside, instead of positive effort, which is to actively try to be aware, we're making negative efforts to stop things outside so that we can do this. So we're working funnily in a negative way, trying to stop things so that this will happen. Instead of just not trying to stop anything, just trying to be aware.
A man, noble silent, noble talking.
He said it shouldn't be noble silence, it should be noble talking. Yes, because he says noble means it's wise. So then you have to think before you speak. So you have to be aware of what you're thinking, what you want to say. You have to think about whether it is something wise to say. Is it the right time, right person to speak to? Should you say this? Is it necessary before you speak?
So leading wisdom and leading alone.
So wisdom should lead the parade. That's what the Buddha said. He said the Buddha didn't say don't speak. The Buddha said when you speak, speak with awareness and wisdom. Otherwise people think of noble silence as keeping silent. I must not speak.
So
a quick observation which I'd like Sayadaw to comment on, which is that for me at this point the practice is very, you know, build continuity.
Yes.
Has to do with preferring, like consciously preferring experience to concepts. That the big draw is to go into conceptual thinking.
Yeah.
And that the awareness is in the immediate experience.
Yeah.
And so to keep making that
choice.
You know, just be aware of the fact if I'm over here, to come back here.
Mm. To the D Sasa Tema Red Dua Agu Atomu Ma Dua Balo Agu Sura Tu Ye Tu Atomu Bawa Ma Bo Agu Chin Ya Dua Amye Ma တိပေးရတဲ့သူကိုယ်သူဟိုစိတ်ကတိနေတယ်တိနေတာနဲ့ပြဉ္ညာနဲ့တွဲနေတယ်တိတဲ့အာယုနဲ့ပြဉ္ညာနဲ့တွဲနေတယ်တိတဲ့ဖက်ကိုပြန်ပြန်ယူခဲ့ဖို့အဲဟိုပြဉ္ညာဖက်ကိုပြဉ္ညာကရှိနေတယ်ဒါပေမဲ့အဲ့ဒီကိုစိတ်ကအရင်ရောက်ချင်တယ်လေအဲ့တော့ပြန်ပြန်တတိပေးရပေးနေရတာပေါ့
Yes,
that's fine.
I'm talking ဘူးတဲ့လူကပါပြဉ္ညာဖက်ကိုပဲ automatic အာယုပြပြီးလား
Yes,
that's fine. အဲ့ဒါကိတာအာယုပြပြီးလား
Yeah.
那阿托塔拉说理念啊你这边管不得了。你别不多了嘛。我啊这里呢有点哎呦。
The natural tendency of the mind because of delusion is to go into the concepts. Because that is the defilement that knows concepts. Defilements believe in concepts. And delusion believes in concepts. But as we continue practicing, the mind does begin to realize the experience itself, the reality of the experience, which is paired with the concept. And once you begin to see that bit, he says, then yes, you have to direct your mind towards it, because the natural tendency is to go to the delusions concept. So just to... And that reminding is good, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
we see, but the tendency is to immediately see the person, the wall, the chairs, you know. Now we see, we also see the concept, but we remember to notice that we see before then going to the concept.
seeing that one knowing my situation, I'm missing knowledge. Seeing kidney out, the beam machine.
Yes, so although it is necessary to look at the concept, we need it for survival and so on, but you do it, you know, you recognize the seeing first, the sense of seeing, and then, yes, you have to do the rest anyway. So that's what the Buddha means by appamadana. Appamada. Not forgetting, right?
Not forgetting the nature of your...
Not forgetting nature. That means not forgetting reality.
We
never forget concepts. It's automatic.
Right.
We
don't
forget it.
And also, sick don't you matter. I don't know sick don't
you.
You think that sick matter, being your aunt.
Yeah.
You better than you say that nature of aunt.
There are three sets of three kinds of objects and three kinds of minds. When the object is a concept, you know the mind is a defilement. There is defilement in the mind because delusion is the one that takes it. If it's reality, the mind is wisdom, pinya, when it's reality, yeah, the mind is wisdom. A vipassana wisdom sees reality, paramatta basically. Then there's the third object is nibbana, and the mind that takes nibbana as an object is the megajnana and the palajnana. So three objects and three kinds of minds, and the mind always takes the object that it deserves, that matches its
qualities.
Yes, so if there's a lot of conceptual stuff that the mind is taking, more delusion and more defilements are likely to arise in the mind.
Reality, nature,
when you know, the objects, the things that the mind considers are more about the realities of things, then more wisdom is likely to be in the mind.
Yeah.
So Seattle said, like, when we, you know, we need to look at things, and when we walk around, we need to look, we need to listen. He says, remind yourself to know that you are hearing and listening or seeing and looking before just doing the activity, because it brings that wisdom in. It allows that wisdom to have its place first before dealing with the concept. Mm-hmm. So there's some reminder of the reality of it. So he's saying, although you're looking, now looking at the concept, the understanding that there is a natural phenomenon at work is also there. Yeah. He said, is it because we look that we see? Or is it because we see that we look? But looking is intentional. Yes? Is it because we look at the, for example, the glass, that we see the glass? Or is it because we can see that we can look at the glass?
The second.
Because if we were blind, if we couldn't see, we couldn't choose to look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The intention to listening. Because we cannot
only see. Yeah, so you can't see, you can only listen. We can only choose to look at what we can see. If we couldn't see in the first place, what would we choose to look at? He says, wisdom understands that seeing is happening. Yeah? He says, greed only sees what it wants to look at.
And then it chooses to look at.
Yeah, greed is always looking for what it wants, and then it chooses to focus on that and doesn't see others. It only sees what it chooses to.
Yes. I just have a comment about the previous. You had difficulty with agitation.
Yes.
And I was doing a long retreat, and I had a similar thing happen in the evening. It was so strong that I felt I wanted to jump out of my skin. And I just, every night, it was the same. So I asked the teacher what I could do about that. And he just said, step back in your head. So expand your consciousness in your head. Like it's...
Go back into the awareness, yeah.
Well, no, it's like, it's probably my head was too tight. Just step back in your head, that's what he said.
Yeah.
And it was like a miracle. It was just like a miracle. It just...
You know what, too.
I didn't have it anymore. I was able to do that once I got too tired, just expand.
More expensive, yeah.
And I just wonder whether Sayadaw could comment on that.
Yeah. Tu uzin na la tcha sia na la mti tu alo we nya dai nya nya ma thai na a chain ma alo agitation ta a mya lo khot thwat twa chin na da ba tu sia o me ro de uzin na mti tu o sai tha ma anaw so lai lo byaw
de
eh so lai so ro tu a cha ni la li and now so lai do tu lo twa de lo phit bro just kaung wa le de miracle lo be de a la uzin ba byaw
And look at my knowledge.
Yeah, because the skillful
means. So, involved in it. So, I am very involved in it. Not the right sort of thing. Say good, say good, that sounds chicken. Say good, be a chicken or wow, look at it. I am very good, look at it.
In fact, when we're agitated, we're too involved with trying to watch the agitation. Probably we're too involved in it, the object. And stepping back actually brings us back to. It also allows you to know that this is an object rather than being part of the object, you know, being agitation or watching agitation. So so subconsciously, once you step back, that understanding is already there that the, you know, what you were involved with before is actually just
and step an back
hallelujah. He has had yogis say to him, I mean, when he tells people to step back, some people say to him, sometimes they can step back and sometimes they can't. Sometimes you try and you're just not able to step away.
Mahayana, let go. Let go, let go, then not talk with you. Am I a man? I told you, 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 I
practitioners told him how in Mahayana they teach them three like techniques. One is to tell yourself to let go, and another two, I don't know. But he says all these techniques are based on wisdom. It's actually bringing in right view in a sense. And he says, and they also experience this, that sometimes they can just do it and sometimes they can't. And he says it's very simple. It's how much wisdom is in the mind at that time. When the mind can move into that mode of wisdom, yes, it occurs naturally. And sometimes there's so much defilement in the mind, it's not able to find that wisdom.
Too much wisdom.
He says sometimes just a little bit of defilement and you can't find the wisdom.
A positive achievement, a beautiful achievement, not so achievement, but look at it, I don't know, it's not
so achievement.
Yeah. See, I just said,
it's
not so bad. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
He says it's only when we can understand what that sort of stance is, yeah? When there is an understanding in the mind of it, that we can actually practice it. Whether it's letting go or stepping back, if we can understand, if that understanding is there, we can do that. Without the understanding, which is the wisdom, we can't do it. And he says, you notice that the stance of wisdom is always a distant stand. It's always stepped away. It's either watching from the side, or whether you say watching from, you know, the back or overview. It's always a broader perspective. It's never involved. Wisdom doesn't step up to it, doesn't step into it. It always is stepped away. But all defilements are very sticky. They stick to the object. They grasp it. They want to feel it, be into it, yeah.
Wisdom
always steps away. He says when you practice vipassana, sometimes it feels like you keep walking away from something, so you're walking backwards, keep stepping away from the experience. Yeah. So that everything is just happening when you're stepping
away.
Now people are trying so hard to get into what they're watching. They're sort of leaning forward in there. See, I know in Hong Kong, you know, there's this big Buddha on the mountainside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the Buddha sits in this posture, and one of his hands is up. It's a mudra, I think. But it's just like up, as in like saying stop. He said he looked at the Buddha, and he said he had... This is how he interpreted it. The Buddha was saying, don't get involved with the object. He said the Buddha is saying the whole of samsara, we've been following the object, stop now. He says when a yogi is too involved in the object, in the state, you know, in the thing that is being observed, a lot of expectation and aversion comes up. You want it to be this way, you don't want it to be this way. A lot of that comes up when you are involved with the object. But when a yogi watches the watching more, watches the mind more, the way it observes and so on, the yogi learns how the mind works and learns to become skillful at using the mind and recognizing the mind and its patterns. So you become more skillful at knowing how to practice. Understand your own practice. Yeah.
So with seeing, because seeing, as soon as we have our eyes open, we're seeing. And I've been thinking how to be aware of seeing consciousness. And I don't think this is correct, but it is the same thing. It's sort of like pulling back. You see sort of the wide picture, slight, not really out of focus, but without focusing. And I'm wondering what that teaches me, how that helps me understand the world.
He's said that my eyes got bigger. So mingwe jie la le, ho a phit de belo khom le. Belo khom le blur of hope, damn it, bow my eye, you can't. I mean, you think that, but damn it,
right, right, right.
The only bad thing is that you are like, but one mother, but below go,
bad thing.
These are just like exercises that also help us to recognize something as an object, and there's the knowing. You know, so ultimately it leads up to realize which is mine. Is anything personal? There's a seeing and there's a knowing. And also because you're being aware, noticing this, of course, you know, your sati, samadhi, everything is developing. The fact that you're even able to step back and recognize there is seeing, he says there is some wisdom there already. The fact that you're able to do it and you're not just involved in, you know, you can't separate sight from what is being seen here. So that's right view already. So there is that sort of wisdom, and we can recognize that as well, different from when we couldn't or
didn't know.
This mind, this knowing, and this object are, you know, they're happening, but I'm not doing it.
I'm not seeing.
I am not seeing, but this phenomena is happening. Yeah, this is. Just please carry on with Sierra. I'm just going to the toilet.
What do you think? What do you talk? What do you think?
For me,
I'm not trying to think.
Saw 5-6 years ago.
More than that, actually.
Who?
More like 12.
Bhavana Society.
Right? So, she recognized me.
Yeah.
She came up. I looked.
Then, remember?
No.
I don't remember.
No. She spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Still no.
Maybe that time she yelled, I think.
I wish I were here. So, there's the memory, and then she said the name.
Mm.
Right?
Then yeah.
A twig.
Yeah.
And she said, then she said, John is over there. And I looked. Oh, no, she said, John is sitting in the chair in the hall. And so in the hall, I went in and I looked. Ah, it's John.
Mm-hmm.
Like, John has no ear either. So it has happened with people. People I knew for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to Canada. I meet. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just. And then they say a name.
Mm-hmm. So you need to recall every memory, everything about related to this thing.
Right. And similarly, at the monastery, I used to use chainsaws in my job. A lot. Used to use these power saws, you know, chainsaws, cut down trees, prune. And someday they asked me to fix the chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
I stand there blank. And, you know, just wondering what to do next. Like car, drive a car.
Yeah.
I gave up my driver's license because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, driving a car, a lot to do. And you know, anyhow, it's these memories. Not everything comes together like it used to.
Yeah, because you not used to. Memory is, if you memory want better, it need to be again and again and doing. So habit, the familiar, the memory is more easy to come back. If you long time you not thinking about this, long time, this will start to come in very stuck. Not piece by piece coming. Mm-hmm. Not flow like this. Because you're not thinking too many time, not happening in your mind. So if you want to memory good, you need to repeat again and again and again, that's all.
Repeat the same thing?
Yeah, right, again and again. That's why your memory is good.
Fixing the saw.
Right.
You need to repeat it over. So it,
but also you are now meditation. You are all the time present moment, aware of it. In the present moment, long time, so the mind cannot think too much. For example, I cannot remember too much because my mind is empty now. Sometimes they talk and slowly I think and come back. Even the Czech Republic, I saw one monk come to practice long time.
Yeah.
I saw him now, I don't remember.
Really?
Anything cannot come back.
See?
But the whole 2 weeks together practice, I don't remember yet. Now, is it this?
It, so she gave me this airplane ticket and I get this fancy seat. Uh-huh. And they give you this bag full of stuff. Right? I empty out this bag full of stuff. And in there, there's toothbrush, little toothbrush, uh-huh. Right? Shorthand toothbrush. And the
tiny toothpaste.
I recognized it said on there, you know, red label, Colgate. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't believe it. I could see, I actually was able to sit and watch. I thought about, you know, lip gloss. My mind wouldn't accept that it was a toothpaste.
Well, you didn't know what
was so small. I've never seen before.
That's why. Yeah. You have a no sign of this.
But the word Kone, you know, was on there, and I, for the longest time, I could, and then I got the toothbrush, and I thought, oh, just squeeze it out. Even when I squeezed it out, I thought it was some sort of gel, not toothbrush, you know, something else.
Booby trap.
I never did not recognize it as toothpaste.
Sanya doesn't have any recollection of this, so he can't think correctly about it.
Memory comes in there, so can I repeat here?
Yeah, if we want to remember something, we have to repeat it to ourselves constantly or use it constantly, then it comes easily. But once we don't use it for a long time, then you have to pull teeth again.
So the point of this was to ask,
yes,
if you've been mindful for a long time,
will your memory be better?
Worse, basically, you're just remembering other stuff.
Correct.
And you know, no panic, but you don't have to be ready to let go of remembering stuff.
Whatever
is not important, he says. Yes, and also he says if you are very much in the present moment, there is so much to know in the present moment, you have to let go of the past.
Right.
But I just think if you ask the stewardess, what is this? You should have think you're a Zen monk. You know?
He says, now when we think, what is this, we think of the concept. But when we are, he says, in the practice, when you ask what is this, you want to think of the nature.
You say I don't nature, understand you, that.
Sorry.
How do you relate to that?
When you say nature.
Sorry, could we go back a minute? What did you, I didn't understand.
What he means by nature.
You don't
think of the concept.
You think of the concept, you think of the nature. What does that mean?
I could mean that we do base a body. What is this?
Nature is the reality of your experience.
Direct experience.
What you directly experience. Or I shouldn't use the word you. What is being directly experienced? So maybe there is touch, there is not understanding what this is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, the reality of the experience. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry
if you were saying.
It was the same question.
I thought so.
You were saying that you have those three kinds of minds. Can you go through that again? One is
conceptual
thinking leads to three kinds of
defilements. Defilement mind takes concepts. Defilement mind sees concepts. Vipassana jnana mind sees paramattha, reality. Megapala jnana mind sees nibbana.
What is this? What is this?
He says, when we say, what is this? Yeah, there is, maybe we are thinking, what is this? So we're not interested in what we are thinking about, but recognizing that there is a process happening. We are interested in the process, and that is what
it is.
What is it that is happening?
Yeah,
that's the
process.
That's what we're interested in.
I don't know whether this is involved. I'll ask the question. How do we get involved in the world, in things that really matter, if the practice tells us to step back from the object?
But one more, looking at how we involve, how do we get involved in things that really matter? So, we brought. Participate book. We brought with para book. Look in a how local go red. But no, I'm like, I told that I'm here. I remember to have a not so kind of
blue. Look in a look in the canal.
Yeah,
but you see, my bear,
Maybe you misunderstand what means by stepping back, but even if you wanted to do something that's worth doing in the world, you would want to step back away from it so you could survey and regard what you need to do, what's, you know, like when you do work, what's urgent, immediate, for later, you need to step back so you can use your wisdom to decide what to do, what's important, what should be done and so on, what shouldn't be done, and not get in. You do the work, but you don't throw yourself into it and just carry on and don't know whether you're doing the right thing or not.
Right?
So it's the same principle at work, right? So you're not running away from the world when you mean stepping back. It means stepping back to give yourself
You're not doing it, you don't take that action because of your attachment to it, you don't take the action because you're angry, you don't take that action out of a deluded state of mind, you do it because it's the right thing to do, the wise thing to do. Yeah? Bhante, going to ask something.
It's about that Anapanasati is taught as concept.
Yes. Anapana, concept when in that dinner. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And yet you just said concept. No, it's taught. Usually taught as concept.
Yeah.
And yet you just said concept is delusion.
Yet, so this is...
Here it's being used as a tool, right? No. The concept I only use,
Right. He says the relationship is... the relationship is not an exclusive. It's all defilement minds have concept as an object. But not every concept gives rise to a defilement. So it doesn't work the other way. It works this way.
Every defilement mind pay attention to their concept. But every time you don't pay attention to the concept, not the defilement, all the defilement.
Okay.
Because of someone else, it's all a concept. But we have a wholesome state, not a wholesome state.
So you can pay attention to a concept with a knowing, non-defiled mind in the correct, wise way.
Yes. When there is understanding the wisdom of what a concept is, you can take a concept and that's why Sierra says you don't remove concepts, you don't try not to have concepts.
Concept
is not a problem. You understand what a concept is. Delusion is the problem. So you remove the delusion about what concept is.
Like this morning, I was watching. I was taking Sayadaw's recommendation of looking at specific characteristics of mind. I was watching the specific characteristics of delusion when it occurred, and it was. And as you were talking about concepts, I was just wondering. Well, delusion is a concept as well, but now it's clearer that one can look at. Look at it from a different mind, from an observing mind.
Do you want to elaborate? di manaka tua senza ni da le usia e wa chao pyo lo tua tua moha ye tbo ri u tua le la ni da ta mae aim mai ma saka long tong yin da le concept ta khu ba moha le concept ta khu ba idea the bo idea mo di chao concept so a chao lo pyo
ta ma tha
ta ma tha ta bo tha a lo myo tua ai lo myo concept ko saka long tong na da mae a la pinyat ko pyo le concept saka long mo ho I think, you know, when we use the English language, the way we use the word concept, and when we're talking about concepts in the Dhamma, it's not quite the same. You know, when you say delusion is also a concept, it means to, you mean in the sense that delusion is also, you know, something that we can talk about. It is something which has its characteristics and so on. But in the Dhamma, a concept, panyati, it's just the naming of a thing, of a reality. We give it a name, and then we forget there's a reality and we only remember the names. So,
Yes.
Without the concept, we can never
understand the reality underlying it. So what wisdom does is understand the reality which underlies the concept. So it goes beyond the concept to understand what lies beneath, lies with it.
Yes, well, my understanding is, so it's observing the right view, not so much for me, not so much observing mine and the concept, but with the right view. And then
tua om amim mai. With right view, you can observe a concept.
So how? The last time you were here, and I had, before you came, I had experience, and I might repeat it. You know how one day Miles was talking to me, I was getting angry, and then I was watching my irritation. I had this lightning bolt that went through my toes, right through my head. It was like, phew, and it was, and then seeing how powerful it was, I was speechless. I was like, so that was very powerful. And so I was so speechless that I couldn't continue that argument, and I left. It lasted maybe like
anger.
Yeah, but maybe 48 hours, 72 hours. I don't know, but it was so powerful. I could see that how this
I don't ask you anger was.
And yet, you know, after a few days. So how many of that aha moments that inside
over and over again.
He says, when it happens, is when you have to keep your attention on it. Be with it, so to speak. Not just, it happened, and then like carry on to other things, but actually stay with it, seeing the whole, everything about it. He says,
ตัวตุดอดอ่ะอ่ะหมอบลูคําเนี่ยอเป็ดจี้เลยโหลไอ้เฉยมาตูดีดอดอ่ะอ่ะหมอบลูคําเนี่ยอเป็ดจี้เลยโหลไอ้โหลမျိုးเมียนไล่တယ်นะแต่ไม่ได้อ่ะไอ้อันนั้นอ่ะไอ้อันนั้นถ้านี่สู้อ่ะมาเว้ยเออดังนั้นตัวชิชิไม่ยัดตัวออกบ่พี่တော့เปลี่ยนดอดอ่ะผิดแต่หาเนี่ยเปลี่ยนๆผิดแต่ไอ้อะอุซิโหลติเฉ็ดๆเนี่ยไปเฉ็ดมาสึกกันตัวบ่น้าเลยโหล่ะตูไอ้โหลผิดแค่ไข่มาตัวสึกอ่ะเดี๋ยวนี้ not let me down and the chima no lower, ma'am. And do not let me see, pit and see, that was it.
Yeah. He says, when our awareness is not so good, that's when anger has the opportunity to come in with great force. But, you know, maybe we don't learn the lesson completely right away, but there's no choice. He says you still have to do the things you have to do, still have to go on observing, learning from every episode. He said the episode where he learned his very powerful lesson about anger, he said he had not been angry for a year. His Sati Samadhi Panya was very strong. He was practicing continuously, like we, I don't know whether we do. He's practicing so continuously, he had not got angry, he had always kept it under control. He lost it that moment. He lost his awareness that moment. And he exploded like a... He said that was just one hydrogen molecule that...
Hydrogen bomb.
And then
last hydrogen one, right? Last hydrogen
thing. He'd been building up the whole day. Many, many things that were annoying him and frustrating him, but he hadn't been watching it. But he had been aware, barely aware. He had known that it was happening, but he hadn't dealt with it. So when he thought back, he would remember the whole thing. And he knows what led to that explosion when he got home and he asked his brother for some medication because he had a headache. And his brother said, wait a while,
He said, his mind said, how dare you say that to me? That was it.
Oh, he did stop.
Hi, sir. I don't want to say when I am in Burma.
The eye came in.
You talk to me like this? I'm finished. I said, my piano went out. I said, I'm not going to be
But when, you know, so he lost his mindfulness for a moment, you know, he punched the wall and everything, and then somebody reminded him, you're practicing mindfulness, what happened to you? And he says then, once he was reminded, because of that 1 year of practice, the mindfulness also fell on him like a ton of bricks. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he was very powerfully aware of everything that had happened that day in the moment, and yeah, and that's why he learned the lesson. So that's why he says maintenance of awareness is so strong, because it's the maintenance that keeps it ready on standby, so that when we most need it, it's there with all its power.
Yeah.
It's there with all its gathered power to learn a lesson, to take. Yes.
Wouldn't it be relevant, you know, to see what was, or to understand if there was any connection with what was happening in the brain at the time?
Brain?
Yeah, you know, with the mind, and sort of the closeness of it. What was actually happening, like, you know, say the right side of the brain, for instance, you know, powerfully emotive, you know. And
I think he saw everything that was happening in the mind at that time.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So you just don't bring the brain into it at all.
The physical side.
The physical.
I'm not important, actually.
It's not important.
Well,
it's
a concept.
We can't deal with it directly.
Do I? He said, no, any mind. It doesn't matter where it belongs or whatever. He knew, you just know everything that you can. That's happening in the mind.
Just going back to the previous question about standing back and watching the experience, be aware, all the time stepping back, isn't there a kind of risk that we will lose the humanness, the spontaneity of being real with a person to respond spontaneously, and might be frustrating and not really conducive to good human relations?
Hello. Step back, Lodare. As a Lure Nessasana, Neneho, Nuetwe Muro. He says you will become more, when you become skillful, you become more spontaneous, warm, sincere. When you love, you know how to really love without attachment, purely.
Step back, you see Nalia, now so many, you throw Nibo Nalia Madura. Step back and you see it.
He says, maybe we misunderstand stepping back. It doesn't mean distancing from
people,
because it's language, you know. Language is very tricky because it conjures up images of what should be. But I'm trying to convey a sense of what Siara means by stepping back is just not being so. Generally, we're involved with our desires and our aversions, our attachments, with the defilements. When he means stepping back, it means not being so attached, but attached with defilement. At the same time, a wise involvement.
Same time, no?
Sorry?
Is it pull back?
Not necessarily. When he says when there's wisdom, all wholesome states are more able to arise. And with great energy. So all wholesome states will be more present. So if you love, you really love.
Pure love, I don't want love. But attachment is zero.
Not a grasping love or a controlling love, but a real giving love, you know? don't know how to say it. Yeah.
So do you bring true patience?
Sorry?
Is it sort of like bringing true patience, having...
That's right. He says true kanti, true patience comes when there is wisdom. Otherwise, it's tolerating. There's some impatience and enduring, you know, but not just a real patience.
Try to be patient, so we are good. Ambition.
If we are trying to be patient, he says we are actually already a bit impatient. Yes. Yes.
But
when there's true wisdom, you don't even have to try. You feel patient. Mm-hmm. You feel accepting. And then when there's wisdom and the wholesome states arise, he says then, depending on the object, that's what you call the mind. If it's an equal object, you feel metta. If it's somebody who's suffering more than you, it's karuna. Somebody's doing better than you, it's mudita. If it's something you can't help, it's upekkha. It comes naturally because of wisdom.
Depending on the object and the mind, it's naturally come.
Yeah.
This is not try. That time you need to try.
He says the English word detachment conjures up feelings of not loving. But when there's wisdom in the mind, he says it's not like that. When the mind is truly understanding, it's not detachment in that sense. Yeah. Just not a grasping, I think that's a better way to put it.
Conflict has always been there, but it's complacency as opposed to a pandita.
Siram pandita. Sorry, you said what?
Complacency.
Sorry.
Difference between complacency.
I think there are 37 of these, right?
Where
the mind twists akusala, so the subtle differences say between raga and metta, right? Lust and pure love. The difference between anger and compassion.
And Garuna and anger.
Yeah, and there are 37 of them.
Yeah.
I don't remember them all. Yes.
But also, the stepping back is, it's kind of giving you the space.
Well, Ukuna, you're Ubeka, the Ganyashi, the Luali, Ubeka, Pinida. I do my China, Chetsida, I'm home, Mona, I'm home, Dami, do, look at me.
Yeah.
Quite well, I hope. Well, Ubeka, more Ubeka, lower, ignore like that.
True equanimity is when you're able to stay with something and you're not badly affected by it either way. It's not that you, because you're upekkha, you walk away from it. Oh, I don't feel anything about this, so I don't have to do anything. It's not like that. You know, you can go in and help someone or you know, but being upekkha means that you don't take on the suffering. He says there are practitioners who practice, like try to have upekkha all the time, but it's not like that either. He says the mind, naturally, a wise mind, you know, it vacillates between the four, you know, guardian meditation, you know, the four states, and upekkha is actually the last resort. Yeah. The Buddha had karuna. He's called
great,
the great compassionate one.
Yeah. Great, not small.
Yeah. So you were saying.
I was just thinking that by stepping back, it gives us that short amount of space and time to put a pause before we act, which might help us act more wisely.
Wisely.
When we have awareness, when the awareness is present with us, he says, we don't feel in a hurry because we're aware of what's happening. And we have the choice to look at it and decide then how to use it. When we have the space, then we can allow ourselves to choose the time, the place, the person, the words.
But when you're able to push back, you have neither aversion nor grasping. There still could be delusion, right?
There can be moha upeka. Upeka, yes. Because you just don't really, it doesn't, you don't have a feeling for it. You don't know.
Right, but you have that brief instant where you attach, you are able to
detach,
look on.
Yeah.
So there is some, the mind, my understanding would be that the mind would have some level of upeka.
Yeah. Understanding.
In, it's like right attitude.
Yes, yeah.
Sorry, the question is not complete.
You've been able to push back.
Yes.
So there's the lobha and moha, or lobha and dosa are not dominant, right?
Why the word push?
Well, it's just a...
A word.
A separation, whatever you want to call it.
Stepping back.
Right? Stepping back.
Very, yeah.
Right? You're able to look on, is another way to put
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. Right?
And so there would be some element of upeka present.
Yes. But you asked about delusion just now.
No. Well, there could even be a delusion, like some sense of delusion.
To some degree, delusion is always present in the mind. Yeah.
Yes.
Even when we're being aware, there is delusion still in the mind.
Yes.
Like sitting in meditation, good awareness,
samadhi.
Good samadhi, and then the hands disappear, and yogi got shocked. But that's because that's not the wisdom.
Fear and anxiety afraid coming.
Some fear and anxiety
because
comes.
Because of no wisdom, he has awareness good, samadhi good, but wisdom not good. That's why. Disappear, the hand, the eye disappear. So very afraid. Yeah.
Right. If. Yes. Good. Thank you.
That was the moha. Axis.
So moha ga nyanye asanye pe. Degree moha muti ne. Nyan degree akong kandro moha de nya.
Yeah, he says moha and wisdom are opposite, but in degrees, you know. There's if that much wisdom, this little moha, and if that much moha, this little wisdom. So it's in degrees.